tip of her tongue played along her sensuous lips. Tugging on her waistband, she released her skirt to join the shirt on the floor. She was ready for this special evening, and small tattoos adorned her pale skin, which only made her appear even more naked if that were possible. A finger was missing from her left hand, and the brand of a slave was burnt into the satiny skin of her shoulder. A giant man on the bed took another sip from his 40-millimeter brass goblet of wine.
You too.
The other woman removed her top and held it out at arm's length for a moment before letting it fall. Her breasts were small but firm, the oversized nipples already protruding. She laughed, the sound as gentle as the rain, and ran her long hands down her waist to push off her cotton pants. She stepped out of the pile of clothing and kept her legs spread wide, then ran her fingers across her taut stomach and down to the juncture of her thighs. Her skin was as dark as coffee, her raven hair set in bouncy coils that dangled loosely and partially hid her features. There was an acid scar on her neck from when she had been caught out in the rain and as a child. Her nails were long and sharply pointed. The brand of a slave marked her bare shoulder.
Come close.
The huge sec man kept slurping his wine. He shifted position on the bed and let his robe fall open, showing that he was fully ready for the women. His body was colossal and more heavily muscled than a field slave's. White dots marred his thickly hairy chest, showing where he had been shot many times. A thin scar ran across his forearm, where he had blocked a knife thrust, and a small gold ring glistened from his right ear, disguising the fact that the lobe was gone, bitten off in a bar fight. The giant finally placed aside the artillery shell of red wine.
Do me. Do me now.
The women joined him on the bed. Going to either side, the gaudy sluts pressed breasts onto his face, and both wrapped their hands around his waist. Almost suffocating from the delicious softness, he ran rough hands over their bodies as he sucked on one nipple, then bit another. The blonde lifted a leg onto the mattress and guided his hand to her softness. His stubby fingers played as the brunette wrapped her strong fingers around him, but he pushed her off. Not yet, too soon. He wanted this to last the whole scorching night.
You!
He grabbed the blonde by the shoulder, hauling her to the floor. Obediently, the woman took him fully into her mouth and began to use her talented tongue. He groaned in lust as she rotated her head around him, playfully using her teeth at just the right spot.
Nuke me again. Do that again.
No, that's quite enough.
The giant snapped his head around and tried to focus on the figure standing in one corner of the room. A thousand questions filled his mind, but his hand instinctively darted for the blaster in the gun belt hanging from the nearby bedpost, only to find the weapon gone. Frantically, the sec man tried to extract himself from the ministrations of the two naked sluts, so pleasurable before, now a deadly trap. But the women hung on tighter, digging in their nails to hold him in place. As he struggled to get loose, the stranger walked into the firelight, raised an axe, and brought it down with unbridled fury. The blade passed through the arm the sec man had raised to protect himself. The pain rooted him to the spot, and as he tried to scream, the women pulled long, thin needles from within their hair and stabbed upward through his jaw, pinning his mouth shut. Unstoppable, the axe fell again, opening his chest, and the women hastily backed away as his beating organs slithered out of the red body cavity. The giant fell backward, reeling from the loss of blood, and the axe descended once more, permanently ending the matter. As the stranger yanked the axe free from the dead man's head, he saw the exposed heart suddenly beat a brief flurry, and then go still. Nukeshit. The huge man had been hard to chill. Perhaps the hired coldhearts hadn't been lax in their failed attempts to ace the battle-scarred Goliath. Pity he couldn't be bought. He would have made a wonderful bodyguard.
Good work, my pets.
Chancellor Griffin wiped the crimson blade on the sheets. Blood was still flowing from the warm corpse, and he had trouble locating a dry patch to clean his weapon. As he shifted a blanket, the gun belt became visible, tucked far underneath the bed, completely out of reach. The two slaves bowed to their master, then raised smiling faces. plush lips smeared with blood.
You're filthy. Get washed and visit the next man on the list. And be quick. There is much to do tonight.
Gathering their clothes, the women hurried off, exiting through the same hidden doorway their master had entered. Removing a bit of skull from his weapon, Griffin tested the nicked edge of the blade and decided it was still in good enough shape for one more kill. After that, silence wouldn't be necessary, and he could move openly. Lifting the brass cup, he drank the wine in a victory toast. Everything was going precisely on schedule. Nothing could stop him now. Not even the mighty Lord Bastard himself. Armed guards walking in front and behind, Kinnison walked down the main corridor of the mansion, waving and smiling at the cheering people lining the way. He had a son, an heir to carry on his reign. Triple damn fools had better cheer, or he'd rip the bones from their flesh. The pain in his limbs was especially bad today, but the Baron forced a smile and continued along with the procession. Slaves threw rose petals in the air, an old man blew a tune on a harmonica, and the Sekhmen stayed very close to the chained midwife carrying the newborn Baron. But Kinnison was annoyed that his preparations for the parade had failed so miserably. Every step was agony, even though he was wearing fresh bandages boiled in clean water, had smeared ointment on every open sore, and even took an extra dose of Jolt to ward off the pain from his disease. The Baron knew the drug was rotting his mind, even as the disease did his flesh, but he had no choice. 12 more winters, and he could die. Not until then would the boy be big enough to rule the islands, and their 100 bills. That was the age he was when he pushed his own father off a balcony to seize the Iron Throne. His grandfather had once told him how the secret of black powder was found in an old book. Just a book, sitting forgotten on a shelf for decades. Amazing. Unfortunately, it wasn't the strange, silvery stuff in pre-dark military blasters. Nobody had ever been able to duplicate that smokeless brew. But the grainy black powder did operate muzzle-loading blasters, and if ground very fine, it would work in rapid fires, at least for a while. They always jammed. Only his family knew the formula for the precious black powder, and protected that prize by having 100 different chems delivered to the mills, when he needed only 3. In recent years, Kinnison thought he would be the last of the noble line, taking the knowledge to his grave. But now he had a son to carry on the reign. In some indescribable way, that made him feel immortal. Oddly, while black powder was the source of his island's wealth, the firebirds were its strength, the power that made his words into law. The sleek missiles obeyed his commands as if alive, and would never swerve from a target once it was in view. More than a dozen times since Skydark, other barons, coldhearts, pirates, and muties had attempted to seize control of Maturo Island, but the firebirds always slaughtered the invaders, and nobody had tried open rebellion for quite a while. However, the local barons were constantly testing him by sending old fish and sick slaves as their tribute, sometimes even beer they watered down with piss. Each mistake was savagely answered by a barrage of firebirds, and there would be no more trouble for years. That was until some fool decided to try again. The dockyard dogs of his island feasted richly on the entrails of those who dared to challenge his power. Approaching the throne room, trumpeters blared a herald for the arrival of the Baron and his son, which naturally made the infant start to wail in fear. Seriously annoyed, Baron Kinnison glared at the men, and they quickly retreated down a side passage. Fused brain idiots.
My lord, a moment!
Turning in the doorway, Kinnison stared at the disturbance. It was a corporal from the Coast Watch. Evander something, good man, had chilled a guard with his bare hands for sleeping on a watch.
What? My lord, pirate ships have been spotted on the horizon, and the quartermaster is unhappy with the number of firebirds we have ready. I understand this is an important moment, the coronation of your first son. Congratulations, my lord. The safety of the Vill may be in danger. Would it be completely out of the question
to... You talk too much.
Kinnison turned to the midwife.
Take my son to his room. Double the guards and stay there until called. Understood?
Yes, my lord. I shall guard the boy with my life.
You'd better.
The Baron touched the blaster at his side. The woman paled and raced away with a full squad of Sekhmen in her wake. Anxiously, the crowd waited to be told what was happening.
Evander, with me. The rest of you stay here.
Murmuring among themselves, the attendees did as ordered, nobody wanting to be the first to leave and risk the wrath of the